A Spring Garland by Armstrong Gibbs, played by the Guildhall String, a little bouquet of spring flowers.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn at Henry Ford Community College, and thank you for tuning in to this beautiful classical programming. If you would like to learn about some live, wonderful programming opportunities, well, I've got one for you. Friday, May the 8th, is the next performance of the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra. That's right, that gem of live, wonderful music in our own backyard. Friday, May the 8th, next performance. The two 2009 winners of the Youth Artist Solo Competition will give a performance accompanied by the Dearborn Symphony, as well as the Dearborn Youth Symphony, joining the Dearborn Symphony for a piece. You will not want to miss this beautiful opportunity to enjoy some great programming in a live venue. It just can't be beat. For more information or tickets, call 313-565-2424. That's 565-2424. Or as always, check out the Dearborn Symphony website at dearbornsymphony.org. We're proud of the symphony. You should check it out.
Good morning, this is WHFR Dearborn, and we are the station making waves. Stay tuned, for we are not alone.
Welcome to We Are Not Alone. Where local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomena. Just a few weeks ago, I attended the International UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, where 30 high-profile speakers presented their evidence that we are not alone in the universe. And I had the distinct pleasure of meeting and interviewing several of them for the TV version of this show. And one of my favorites was David Sirita. My introduction to Mr. Sirita's work was in viewing his excellent documentary, Evidence, The Case for NASA UFOs, where he used NASA's own video footage to show that seemingly intelligently operated craft are plentiful in outer space, near Earth, and beyond. And his latest endeavors are in subtle energies to include anti-gravitational and electromagnetic propulsion devices, presumably back-engineered from crashed disks from outside our world. And we are fortunate to have him on the line with us today. Welcome to the show, Mr. Sirita.
Good to be with you, David.
Well, it's great to have you. We had a great time in Laughlin, didn't we?
Yeah, it was like summer camp in a way, you know, being there for 8 days.
It was.
And there were so many incredible people. And I was also amazed at the attendees. I mean, in fact, I met a man in the elevator who worked for the space lab at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And he had been there since the late 60s. And, when he heard that I had seen a UFO in Berkeley in 1968 right over, you know, near the campus, mm-hmm. and that the lab would have had a perfect view, he said to me in the early 70s that he had seen a UFO in plain view of the lab when he was working there. So It's amazing people like that come to UFO conferences, and multiples of PhDs. I mean, I can't even count the number of PhDs that I met that were in attendance. So this is no laughing matter. I mean, and why are so many of some of the most educated people in even aerospace, a retired military, why are they at UFO conferences if it's just a bunch of, you know, nonsense?
Yeah. Yeah, people have this this idea. They go to a MUFON meeting or a UFO Congress, any of these gatherings where UFO people, shall we say, ufologists are gathering. They're going to see people in little hats, tinfoil hats and goofy masks and what have you. And then you go in and you see all these guys in suits and ties and PhDs and what have you, people like yourself, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, that's great. And one of the things also I liked about the UFO Congress is considering, you know, who's in the audience, you can go a lot deeper. I mean, when you see shows like UFO Hunters, it really just skims the surface of what this is all about. And, you know, it's fun for people, but I think, you know, one of the things that's missing in our media is, I've always believed this. I mean, we keep reducing the material on television to the lowest common denominators as if, because they complain the most, they don't understand things. But we forget that how much of America is attending some form of education right now? Mm-hmm. What percentage of America is in elementary school, high school, and then university? What percentage? It's huge.
That's right.
And then when you consider how many people are graduates, and we're actually trying to educate the lowest common denominator because they complain the most, and then you think of the sponsors out there, and who are you selling to? Do you really want to sell the lowest common denominator? Because those are not the people who are going to buy your cars and your products. It's going to be the more educated and working class of Americans.
Right.
And the more educated and working class of Americans are not listening to a lot of the real dumbed down television anymore, and they're getting poorer and poorer ratings all the time. So,
right.
You know, shows like yours and this conference and, you know, Coast to Coast AM, it's great. We get to get into a much more...
Yeah. Well, what I find is great about my show is that the fact that Henry Ford Community College allows it to be on the air, you know?
Oh, wow.
They're over there teaching science and, shall I say, the worldview science, teaching our worldview. And then they allow me to do this show, which I think is great because, you know, the other voice is heard. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that the colleges are allowing this. And, you know, Henry Ford Community College here in Dearborn, Michigan, allowed Stanton Friedman, in fact, sponsored Stanton Friedman, to come to the school here and give his great lecture on UFOs are real.
Wow.
Just a couple of years ago. So that's saying a lot for the higher education of America, you know?
Yeah, that is saying a lot. I'm being very open-minded. That's great.
Right. Now, you mentioned your sighting back in, what did you say, 68?
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, this is where it all starts for me. I'm only 7 years old in 1968 because I was born in 61. And my dad was getting his PhD at the University of California at Berkeley in psychology, and he had a master's degree already. And there was a lot of, I had a lot of awareness at that age of a lot of things. I mean, I wasn't this dumb kid, and I built model airplanes, and I knew what every, you know, different kinds of planes were at that time, and and model cars. And so when, you know, I noticed all these people pointing up in the sky. And it's amazing, you know, back then you would let your kid walk home from school by himself. you know, today it's pretty hard to do that in a lot of places.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
And there I am. I'm going, oh, my God, everyone's looking up at a spaceship. And I watched Star Trek back then. You know, I was a big Star Trek fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually became a My Favorite Martian fan. And I'm saying, oh, my God, it looks like the Starship Enterprise. It's a silver metallic disc, and there's no markings and a little dome on the top. And this thing was close, you know. It wasn't as close as the cars across the street, but I mean, it was close enough that you could really see the shape of it.
Right.
And it was shimmering, like wavelets of energy shimmering around it. It was pandemonium on the streets. People were pounding on neighbors' doors and telling them to come and take a look. So obviously it wasn't the Goodyear blimp. Right, I remember seeing the blimps at that age. So I knew what I was looking at was really special. It was a spaceship. And after watching it for a full 20 minutes, it just blinked out. It went invisible in a blink of an eye.
No kidding.
And that's something that has beckoned me for, you know, my entire life to understand that these things were not moving through the fabric of space itself. That they, just like, you know, two fish, if they're under the water and they realize that, you know, wagging their tail, it takes a lot of energy in the form of fish propulsion to go from L.A. to the Hawaiian Islands, you know, you realize that if you get out of this heavy stuff called liquid water, you can move faster through air mass. And I think civilizations like theirs have figured out how to get out of space.
Right.
Out of the actual fabric of space itself. And when they disappear, they just simply are no longer in our view, just like if you're under the water and, you know, your buddy fish leaves the water, he's hooked by a fishing line, you can't see him anymore. And he may only be a couple feet away from you now, but you can't see him anymore. He's above the water. And it's kind of like that. And so one of the problems has been, one of the reasons mainstream scientists don't believe in the UFO phenomena is they don't understand the propulsion. They're expecting like an ocean liner UFO to be, you know, cruise by, you know, all the outer planets and, you know, coming by, and we can calculate the time of their arrival, and then they'll show up and it'll all be, you know, known by everybody in the world. And it doesn't happen that way. And when you understand that it's not happening that way, that there's no way you can, according to Einstein's law, and he's correct, get a ship to push against the fabric of space itself and even attain the speed of light, let alone break it. And that if you were doing even 90% of the speed of light, which is, you know, the speed of light is 670 million miles an hour, or 186,282 miles per second. And if you're going that fast, you can't turn to avoid incoming. And because the G-forces on the turn at those speeds will just destroy the craft itself. It'll incinerate. So you realize that, you know, we're expecting them to move the way we move. And that's why we can't accept it's happening. But when you understand the concept of actually canceling out the forces of gravity and inertia that by wave transformation of the mass of their craft, then that they can jump dimensions, then the whole thing starts to get easier to understand.
Okay.
And that has been the biggest problem for mainstream physicists to accept this, you know, even people like Carl Sagan.
Well, that's mainstream physics. What about quantum physics?
Well, in quantum physics, you have things that are even more exciting, and that is that, and a lot of people don't know this, but it is in the history books, that in 1927 at the Fifth Solvay Conference on Quantum Mechanics in Brussels, Belgium, Heisenberg and Niels Bohr approached Einstein with a new proposal that the minds of the researchers were affecting the angular momentum of the electron spin around the proton. And this was really well established, and they knew it was happening because when different researchers conducted the same experiments, they always got different results. And Einstein didn't accept it at first because he wanted a mathematical, repeatable, and reliable universe. In the astro universe, it seemed that you could make observations fairly accurately using relativity, which is just using the speed of light to measure events in space-time. You knew when the sun would rise every day, and you knew, you know, the rotation of the Earth. You could see what was happening in the solar system, and you could mathematically calculate just about anything. But when you get into the quantum universe, where you measure quanta of the atom and smaller, it gets harder and harder to actually get any repeatable and reliable data on anything. And when you get really small, it seems like the mind is actually affecting, you know, the way particles and subatomic particles behave. And there are three or four areas in quantum mechanics where we see what's called strangeness. And strangeness is really indicative of consciousness when you really see how these things function. And that's where, you know, before we get into that, where I think these extraterrestrial civilizations, they have mastered and fully understood the phenomena of mind over matter. Because once your spaceship weighs as little as a photon in relationship to matter, I mean, its mass gravity effect is zero, then how much energy does it take to go the speed of light and beyond? Nothing. You know, in Einstein's equation, equals mc squared, if mass is zero, then the energy to go the speed of light squared is zero. I mean, it's simple as that. And, in fact, Einstein allows, he actually has a phenomena that was that appeared in experiments in consciousness and also in when subatomic systems are entangled energetically. If you separate them over any distance, they communicate faster than light, in fact, instantaneously. So there is no speed of light limit with what's called action at a distance.
This was Einstein's experiment?
Yeah, this is Einstein. Einstein knows that the speed of light can be violated in a vacuum, mm-hmm. in a pure Casimiri vacuum. Light would travel instantly because it has nothing to push against. And then, even more so, action at a distance really baffled him. So it was called spooky action at a distance. They found it in conscious systems. And in fact, in my film, The Voice, we really go into this, the issue of altered states of consciousness and what science is actually discovering in this field. Einstein, initially, because he can't quantify consciousness in a formula, and he can't explain strangeness, and I'll go into that a little bit later, in any way, you end up finding out that consciousness is so random, just like the way people change their mind every minute about multiple different things all day long, that you can't put that in a mathematical formula. And that is how the quantum universe behaves. But when you consider when you get to the point that your spaceship weighs as little as a photon or less, which is a particle of light, then your mind can affect it. It can even possibly tell it what to do, where to go, when to stop and turn left and right. Because the brain produces very low amplitude, very weak energy fluctuations, which you saw at the conference, you know, when I was measuring people's body voltage on a millivolt meter.
Right.
We could see that everybody had different electricity, you know, on the surface of their fingertips, measuring in millivolts, and that my new quantum stone resonator technology, these little pendants people wore, when they wore them, their electricity would go up. Their voltage would start to flow better in their body, and you would see an increase.
Right.
Well, that's all because of quantum mechanics. Now, if I can do that to a person's body with simple stone technology that have been charged in my quantum energy generators, imagine what these civilizations can do to ordinary steel, anything material.
Right.
And vibrate it to the point that literally it goes into another dimension. And then some of the strangeness and phenomena in quantum mechanics starts to apply to matter on a grander scale, not just on a, you know, looking at an atom and smaller and some of the little particles and wavelets, that it literally the mind can affect huge amounts of material.
Mm-hmm.
So
you can control things psychically.
You can control things psychically.
You know, and there have been abductees or experiencers, people who claim to have been abducted or taken aboard craft, contactees, whatever you want to call them, that claim that they can control their ship with their minds, and you say, well, that's crazy. We've never heard of such things. But at the same time, we humans have computers that you can control with the mind, and they use it for paraplegics and that type of thing. They put this thing on their head and control and play a game on the computer.
Yeah, what we do is we interface brain signals and amplify those signals so they can perform a mechanical function.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they do the opposite. They reduce the mechanical object down to zero, mass gravity effect is zero. And they don't need to amplify the brain waves anymore because you don't need a lot of energy to move something that doesn't weigh anything. So that, and once you recognize that idea, you can see the idea of the interface of consciousness with technology that can move, you know, between star systems.
Hmm.
See, we were in a real hurry. We're almost like, you know, cavemen who want to go faster and faster and faster. And because our vehicles are so heavy, we want to get more and more crude energy in the form of exploding, you know, fossil fuels and pistons to crank heavy steel to get it to move forward, you know, mm-hmm. in the crankshaft.
But what some of these
civilizations figured out is, how can I cancel out the forces that are making this vehicle so heavy before I even try to move it? You see, mm-hmm. and then when you understand that everything is just particles and wavelets of energy on the quantum level, everything that looks heavy, It's a matter of altering those functions of those waves, which I've gotten down to a very, very precise science in my new work on differentials and the hidden harmonic codes of the universe, which was my lecture at the UFO Congress, where that actually, you start to understand how gravity functions, you know, how it controls matter and how to undo, kind of release yourself from that tie. And yes, there are people who, like John Hutchison, who can levitate giant cannonballs now because they're able to produce a type of wave, you know, generating system that just seems to cancel these things out. And so it's really exciting. I mean, we may actually be able to do this. In fact, just since we've been back, we heard that Bob Bigelow, he's in Nevada, Vegas.
Yes.
Aerospace kind of, he's a billionaire who's contributing money to MUFON because he wants to figure out how UFOs work.
Right, right. He's backed Roger Lear before in his taking out alleged implants. We're going to have to take a break right now. But when we come back, speaking of making things lighter, I want you to tell us about Mr. Boyd Bushman and his little experiments with magnets, okay? So right now I have to take a break and remind my listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with Mr. David Sirita. And we'll be back right after this non-commercial break. And please stick around.
Listening to the radio, it's a daily activity for many people. But what if you couldn't listen to the radio, hear everyday conversations, or recognize voices of loved ones? Hearing loss is a common, preventable condition in the U.S., and it doesn't just affect the elderly. Protect your hearing. For more information on hearing loss and referrals to an otolaryngologist, the only medical doctor specifically trained to treat the ear, nose, throat, head, and neck, visit www.entdoctors.org. A message from the American Academy of Otolaryngology.
The performing arts are an important facet of life. There is no substitute for the relationship between audience and performer. Your contributions to the Henry Ford Community College Theater Program enable students and faculty to continue promoting HFCC's artistic standards. By becoming a member of the Friends of HFCC Theater, you are allowing the theater program to prosper through establishing a scholarship fund, improving costume and scene shop facilities, and enabling the continuation of musical theater productions. For more information on becoming a Friend of HFCC Theater, call 313-845-6478.
Now, somebody should have told you about Detroit's official underground hip-hop. That's the Zone Radio with the Richards in D.C. Every Saturday night from 8 p.m. to midnight. You're right here on the station making waves across the Great Lakes. 89.3 WHFR.FM. Who else brings it like this? Who? Get with the Zone.
Stay updated, stay in the zone. This is WHFR.FM, station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're speaking with Mr. David Sirita. And before the break, we were talking about anti-gravity, making things lighter, making these alleged craft from elsewhere in the cosmos operate by making them lighter. And while we were in Nevada, we spoke about and showed a little clip of a man by the name of Boyd Bushman and his experiments with the magnets. Can you tell us about that?
Well, Boyd Bushman is a Lockheed Martin senior scientist of 20 years. And, of course, Lockheed is the number one defense contractor for our real, you know, fighter planes, you know, the F-117, the B-1, the B-2 bomber, the new B-2, and the F-22, and now the F-35 coming out. I mean, they build all the super planes. And he candidly tells me, in fact, you know, he actually is the designer of the Stinger missile for General Dynamics, which was called Red Eye, in its early days. And he literally deploys reverse-engineered UFO technology into these future airplanes and even missiles. And he testifies on camera that he's friends with a Navy doctor who treated a young pilot who had just shot down the Roswell flying saucer with a classified super weapon in 1947. And I actually identified using FBI FOIA.gov documents that were released under J. Edgar Hoover term in the FBI, that the Tesla death ray was in development at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in 1943, and that Tesla said the death ray could melt an aircraft engine from 250 miles away. And so it was pretty obvious to me, because the Roswell flying saucer was taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, that was the home of the weapon that was used to shoot it down. And the death ray, even to this day, is the most classified of all weapons, because it's come a lot further. It's way ahead of, it's way beyond anything. When you think of the realm of lasers, I mean, it's completely invisible. There is nothing, there's no munition, there's no beam, there's nothing. You can't see how this weapon works. And I found several incidences in these FBI files. For example, over the San Francisco Bay Area, a pilot had called in and said that the static electricity came over all of his instruments, and that's the last they heard of him, and his plane went down and crashed into the bay with all the passengers. So obviously people were, at that point, testing the death ray. And I can't even believe they did it on civilians.
I was going to say, on our own craft?
Because I don't think the inventors really realized how powerful this thing is. And so I believe that was the weapon that was used, and Bushman's Navy doctor friend said the pilot continued to tell him that, you know, when he landed the plane, definitely there were four aliens, one was alive and at large running around, and the other three were in custody and, you know, pretty messed up. Now, when you consider that even Kenneth Arnold described these flying saucers doing 1,800 miles an hour in June, just months before the Roswell incident. He was in Yakima, Washington, and, you know, 1,800 miles an hour, now, if we had shot one of these things down, and it was going really fast, and this pilot actually described that they were outrunning him. We had the fastest plane we had at the time. It launched out of Texas towards New Mexico, and when he came in contact with this thing, he couldn't keep up to it. So he fires the weapon, and when the plane, you know, the UFO hits the ground, you think, okay, anybody hits the ground at 1,000 miles an hour or even a couple hundred miles an hour, the bodies would liquefy against the walls, the sidewalls.
Right.
But the bodies are intact. And one of the reasons I understand, you know, more and more that this technology I'm talking about involves canceling out forces, and you see how UFOs suddenly stop, suddenly turn, suddenly accelerate, the G-forces on movements like that would destroy any pilot. In fact, it would liquefy their body against, you know, a sidewall.
Right.
So it's pretty obvious they have gravity cancelers, and you know, they cancel all of the forces that we know, not just gravity, even inertia. Inertia is both the energy of a body in motion and the tendency of that body to resist acceleration because of what it's pushing its way through, be it water, air mass, or even space mass. So when you cancel out all those forces, you don't weigh anything.
Right.
When the saucer crashes and hits the ground, the bodies are fine.
Hmm.
And so that answers, you know, part of one of the great mysteries about the Roswell incident. But then Boyd Bushman proceeds to tell me on camera how we have reverse-engineered UFO technology, and then eventually we get into, you know, how anti-gravity actually works.
Now, did Bushman work with back-engineered technology? Did he back-engineer it?
Oh, yeah, he back-engineered it. And, you know, as far as his access to the craft, he seems to, like, he stops me. I'm not allowed to go there. There's a limit to how much knowledge he's going to give me.
Right.
But when we search his name, Boyd Bushman, on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website, under simple patent search, you'll see all these Lockheed Martin patents come up. So we know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not one of those people that, you know, we can't trace him.
Right.
And so he's gone public. Now, as far as how anti-gravity works, it turns out that I've been on precisely the right path and the right understanding of how anti-gravity is actually functioning, and that when we first built our own reverse-engineered models of anti-gravity craft, we were using, if you take two magnets, and, you know, you push them north-north or south-south together on the poles, you get repulsion, right?
Right.
Well, he takes two $5,000 neodymium super high-quality magnets that are toroid or donut shape, and he bolts them together with a brass, you know, non-iron shaft, and they produce a field which he measures about 3 feet wide on all sides around this polarity. Very expensive contraption, you know, $10,000. Then he wraps it in plaster to make it look like a rock, you know, some really tough, probably some kind of plastic, you know, material. So you can't even see the magnets anymore. And it looks like an ordinary rock, and he revisits Galileo, and he drops his anti-magnetic rock off this kind of, I'm trying to remember how tall it was. It's at Lockheed Martin, it's a tower, and it's very, very tall. It's several hundred feet tall, and he drops an ordinary rock next to this rock 9 times. He has these guys drop it, and turns out all the 9 times he drops the two rocks, the one with the magnets falls slower. So, which means it's canceled out a little bit of gravity, and even in a few hundred feet, if you can see an obvious difference, that is very significant, because all you have to do is amplify that, which they did with nuclear-powered electromagnets, and they got anti-gravity.
Wow.
But that was very primitive. You know, that was the first, you know, experiment. And he shows me these cranes lowering these huge contraptions, I mean, weighing many, many, many tons each by crane into the belly of fairly small aircraft that are classified designs, I mean, fully built aircraft that I've never seen before. And these were winged planes, but they were using the anti-gravity just so that visually, if people saw them, they wouldn't think anything was strange was going on.
Right.
But these planes were actually anti-gravitic. Then he shows me not photographs, but diagrams of flying saucers that Boeing Convair built in the late 50s that were using this technology. So that can explain for a lot of, for example, the Betty Cash case in Texas. Lockheed Martin is in Texas, and that can explain for a lot of the severe radiation burns that people get around some of the, what I believe are our flying saucers.
So in the Cash Landrum case,
you know, there are other cases where you get severe radiation burns, whereas other cases where I think the technology is much more refined and advanced, there's no harmful radiation at all.
So in the Cash Landrum case, do you feel that diamond-shaped craft was our technology?
Well, I would guess that it was. It's being pursued by military helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
And because I know about this weapon, and I actually have it confirmed from Boyd Bushman in a new interview that I have not released, that we have that, we're way beyond even that weapon now.
Mm.
And that we're shooting these things down from time to time.
We're shooting what down from time to time?
The extraterrestrial craft.
Okay.
Now, and it's being pursued by a military helicopter. I would say it was a test flight that went awry.
Mm.
And the helicopters didn't shoot the UFO down. They weren't shooting, you know, the Tesla death ray at it. So that would mean there was no harm there. Now, you can also go to the Stephenville, Texas case, which is just a couple of years old now at this point, and where people see this giant, you know, enormous UFO being pursued by Lockheed fighter jets.
Right.
And apparently escorted right over Crawford Ranch, where President Bush lives.
Right.
And again, not firing upon it. And we're in Texas, and this is Lockheed. So I actually get testimony from Boyd Bushman, and I know this will sound outrageous, but when you understand that we really have this technology, and we've had it since, you know, the 50s, reverse engineered.
From the 50s.
Again, that was one of ours. And why were the Lockheed jets escorting it? Because they just want to protect it from anybody who may intrude upon the airspace. And they're flying it over Crawford Ranch so that President Bush can get a look at this classified technology. And again, they weren't shooting on it. And when you know that we have this weapon, if we really believe this, what may have been a mile wide, a half a mile wide spacecraft at Stephenville, and Lockheed jets are right on its tail, don't you think we would have shot it down with this weapon if it wasn't in our control? You know, obviously, we would have shot at it, or at least made an attempt. I mean, if it was really extraterrestrial, then we would have to think, you know, what.
Well, it's been my understanding that we don't shoot them down anymore because they return fire, and we've lost a lot of planes that way and pilots.
Yeah, Linda Bolton Howe built a huge case about this, about, you know, it's kind of like the secret war on, you know, ETs versus us. I mean, yeah, We've lost a lot of our planes because of incidents with them. And there is kind of a respect there. But I think, you know, there are many races visiting us, and we can't even imagine what the deepest levels of our Air Force knows.
Oh, right.
I don't think Congress has any good oversight in this area at all.
They have none.
I don't think they know anything.
I think they know, most of them or some of them know to the extent, we know they're there, but I don't want to ask too many questions because, you know, I want to keep my job. I don't want to, the less I know, the better off I am, that type of thing. But back to this shooting them down or escorting them out, I think the policy lately has been to escort these extraterrestrial craft out of the area, kind of shoot, get out of here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of shooting them down.
Right. I mean, they're, you know, we saw the presentation in Mexico, which I got a copy of by Jaime Musson at the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the footage there is so astounding. And, you know, these smaller handheld digital cameras in HD or high definition are getting a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really see these things closely. These are not fake. You're looking at the real thing, and they're anti-gravitic, and they're disc shape. And I'm starting to get a lot of clues because I know what's inside of them and the mechanics of it, of how to actually build. I actually have blueprints to build my first anti-gravity generator when I can get some funding do it. And it's really happening, and it's amazing to me that, you know, one of the things that Boyd Bushman is saying is, yes, we have, you know, access to the Roswell saucers and other saucers that have crashed or been shot down. But what happens is when these four-star generals come in and meet with these scientists, and it's not Congress who knows where the Roswell saucers are right now or has access. It's all these, you know, really high-level scientists that are keeping it a secret inside of the Air Force. And there are people who know where they are, because I have met so many incredible expert witnesses who have actually seen them firsthand. And what they say is that, you know, these generals are so arrogant, they come in, all they want is the latest weapon, you know, what can you build for me to, you know, help me win my war? And they give them so little time. They write checks for, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars sometimes and more, and even in the billions. And they don't spend enough time with these scientists to know what's really going on. But if there was more funding to appropriate to reverse engineering this technology, we would be a lot further along in understanding it.
So why aren't we using these weapons or some kind of weapon, advanced weaponry, in the war against terrorism?
We don't need to. I mean, these things, again, remember, just think of the secrecy of the atomic bomb and how it failed and how quickly Russia develops the atomic bomb. In fact, Russia wins the arms race, completely clobbers us, by building the most powerful hydrogen bomb of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And we could not beat them. I mean, even to this day, I wonder what they really have over there. I mean, the numbers of megatons that they were able to produce simply outdid us. And then Kennedy signed the treaties, and, you know, all of it kind of ended.
Mm-hmm.
But you think of how quickly that knowledge got out, so that so many different countries in the world had access so that they could build their own atomic weapons.
Yeah.
This weapon is so classified, it cannot be used in a war right now, because if a plane carrying it were to be shot down, it would be in the hands of the enemy.
Right.
And I do believe it would be brought out if we were in a world war. I think the United States would pull it out.
Don't you think?
It's there. Yeah. You know, I have total confirmation that it's there.
But don't you think that other countries have had crash disks also and had access to?
Well, they might have.
An opportunity?
There are possibilities that we have even shot these things down from our bases abroad.
Hmm.
And because of our continuing conflict with some of the extraterrestrials, yeah. But I don't know, even if, you know, and why some of these extraterrestrials are not armed. They don't have weapons. They don't seem to be interested in weapons. They probably figure they're so fast and they can outmaneuver us in every way.
Right.
That it was a great surprise to them that we developed a weapon that doesn't use bullets or munitions or missiles or anything.
Yeah.
That is a type of beam weapon that can just completely take them down.
Well, you'd think they'd know it by now, eh?
Oh, they know it by now.
Yeah.
They know it by now. But, I mean, look at us. I mean, it's not so far-fetched. We go to Mars. We go to the moon. We're not armed.
Right. That's right.
We can't carry all those munitions with us to Mars to protect our little spacecrafts there. Right. We have spacecraft exploring the whole solar system, you know, and they're not carrying weapons.
Right.
So is it so surprising that ETs would, right. you know, they might leave the mothership and then come down here and a couple of them, you know, get lost in a scrap and the rest go home. I
mean, right.
But well, I don't think most of these, when you have the ability to jump dimensions and go anywhere in the universe you want to,
right.
I don't think there's a desire to come and destroy, you know, the human race.
No.
I mean, why? There's so many planets with nothing on it. There's just no point.
I always say if that were their agenda, we would not be having this conversation.
We would already be gone.
We'd be gone.
Yeah, if that was their agenda.
Yeah. We need to take one more break and for PSAs and remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here out of Henry Ford Community College. And I am David Twitchell. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. We're speaking with Mr. David Sirita, and we're going to be right back with him right after this non-commercial break. Stick around.
In times like these, strangers at your door should be treated cautiously. But unwelcome strangers in your home can be your worst nightmare. Home invasion is a form of armed robbery where criminals break into homes through unlocked or open doors and windows. They even trick people into opening their doors to confront victims face-to-face. They can be after money and valuables, threaten personal assault, or take members of the family captive. But you can be proactive against these disturbing attacks. Learn how to protect yourself against home invasions. Never open the door to strangers. Secure your home with high-security locks and quality door and window hardware. Consider a home security system and even a dog. It's also a good idea to devise an action plan for your family in case intruders ever do enter your home. To learn more about how to keep your home safe from intruders, visit ncpc.org. That's ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Are you an HFCC college student looking for a particular textbook? How about writing utensils, paper, or Henry Ford apparel? You can find it all at the Henry Ford College Store. The College Store carries textbooks, supplies, clothing, and the most widely used classroom software. Staff members are always on hand to help you out. The College Store is located on the main campus in Dearborn, right next to the Facilities Management Building. For more information on the Henry Ford College Store, call them at 313-845-9603 or visit them online at www.hfcc.edu to order textbooks and quick study guides. The Henry Ford College Store has everything that you need to succeed.
WHFR.FM is proud to be the station bringing you the nationally syndicated show, Mountain Stage. Hosted by Larry Gross every Sunday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., Mountain Stage brings exclusive live performances from a diverse list of musicians from folk, bluegrass, jazz, roots, blues, and more. Past guests have included Buddy Guy, Carrie Noble, Katie Lang, Arlo Guthrie, and so many more. For more information about Mountain Stage, visit mountainstage.org or just tune in every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. on this very station. That's Mountain Stage, where musicians come to play. WHFR.FM, bringing you the best music on the airwaves for 20 years and counting.
And this is David Twitchell here on WHFR.FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And we're back with Mr. David Sirita. Mr. Sirita, you were talking about at the convention. You were referring to you use the drain of your pool to demonstrate the natural motion in all nature. How does that relate to anti-gravity?
Well, I wasn't using the drain. My swimming pool, I would always notice these vortexes as black shadows spiraling and spinning counterclockwise in the pool. And I noticed a lot of strange things happening in them. And I also noticed when I concentrated on them, they got bigger. And which was really interesting when you consider the mind over water experiments that have been performed by many different scientists.
Right.
And so I got my high-definition camera out and shot some really clear video of this incredibly large formation. And as we were filming it, my wife and I, were Crystal, were both concentrating on it and noticed, oh, my God, I mean, it's the biggest one I've ever seen. And as soon as the pool man came in, you know, he's smoking a cigarette, he's unlocking the gate. Hmm. He hadn't even touched the pool. And as soon as he opened the door, it just dissolved. And I thought, oh, my God, did his consciousness, because I'm very aware of the work in the film we're distributing also called Water, which is at my, you know, voiceentertainment.net website, that this was probably happening. So that was interesting. But then as I took the photography, the videography of it, and I looked at the film, I noticed that something I didn't see to the naked eye is that simultaneously to this black, shadowy, it looks literally like a spiraling, you know, galaxy spinning into this kind of black hole in the center. I noticed that right on top of it, these bright radial lines were spinning clockwise right on top of it. And that going all the way back to my UFO sighting when I was a little kid, I kept having these dreams about clockwise and anti-clockwise lights. One set of blue and green lights was going one direction, and kind of yellow, red lights were going the other direction. Mm. And what I realized many, many years later is that, you know, green, blue is a shorter wavelength or higher frequency waveform than red, orange or red, yellow. So that between the two of them, there's something called a differential, because when two waves spin against each other that are not equal and opposite wavelengths, you have something called a difference or a differential. Mm. And what I noticed in the videography was that I was firstly amazed that a clockwise, anti-clockwise wave could be sitting on top of each other. But then I noticed there were interference patterns at the 9 o'clock position where amazing phenomena were occurring. So when I slowed the film down and took frame by frame and made pictures out of it, I was utterly astounded at what was actually happening. And in the interference patterns, I could see very clear, geometries, triangles, rectangles, squares, cubes were manifesting. And when the spinning got very evolved in the photography, the differential between the clockwise and the anti-clockwise wave got larger. So they separated themselves off, because now we had all these little architectures, cubes and triangles spinning around in the vortex as well. Hmm. And I realized that, you know, that was creation. That was, you know, looking at how all particles and antiparticles in the quantum universe, everything has an antiparticle. So if you have an electron, you have a positron. If you have a proton, you have an antiproton. If you have a muon, you have an antimuon. And, you know, you have six quarks and you have six antiquarks. Everything is dual paired. Hmm. And I realized also that in all of these particles, you have geometries. So I realized that what was happening here was a kind of liquid model of the creation of all of the familiar, you know, shapes and architectures that are known in nature. And then what I did is I took a natural six-sided piece of quartz crystal, and the first thing you notice is that, you know, oh, my God, this is not a perfect six-sided hexagon. All the sides are not the same length. You know, precisely not the same length. Mm-hmm. And you think, you know, does nature make a mistake? And why does man build his hexagons with every side is the same length? Mm-hmm. And I realized that if two counter-rotational waves caused the creation as waveforms of a six-sided piece of crystal when it was in its liquid state, then the waves themselves, mathematically, I could calculate doing a new type of math that I actually invented called differential mathematics, where because everything in the quantum universe spins clockwise and anticlockwise, I would divide the distance in the faces of my six-sided quartz crystal into each other, both clockwise and anticlockwise. And this is all in my book, Differentials, on my website at voiceentertainment.net. And so you can actually see this. There's a whole book that I have there. Hmm. And when I did the numbers and I did the math, I went, oh, my God, these are not random numbers. These are beautiful harmonic frequencies that came together, opposing fields, to make this crystal. And I remember the IBM scientist Marcel Vogel, who became very obsessed with crystals and believed they would be the hard drives of the future, and at Stanford University in California in 1993, scientists were able to put a movie of the Mona Lisa and a 3D movie of a hummingbird inside of a crystal, just like we put a movie in a DVD, and keep it there.
Hmm.
Well, I figured out how crystalline structures in stones had this memory, and I was able to program the stone pendants that you saw at the UFO convention
right.
with frequencies that stay in there, and that when your body plugs into it with your fingertips, it actually, without any electricity in the stone itself, just memory, it vibrates our body into a higher dimension of energy, which we can measure on the voltmeter. So what you're seeing in the counter-rotational spin is not only the creation of architectures, but in the space between the two counter-rotational spins, you get something called, first you get a ratio between the two, then you get a differential. And the differential is the leftover force, and it's in there that a vacuum forms that actually pulls in energy from literally from the zero-point energy field and actually creates new energy and new mass in the physical universe, which I believe may explain for the mysterious, unexplainable expansion of the universe, that the universe keeps getting bigger.
Right.
And if the universe is getting bigger, where is it gaining its mass energy if there's only a finite amount of energy in it?
Hmm.
Well, it gets even more exciting because now as the universe is expanding, and differentials may explain where that extra energy is coming from, that the vacuum that is created between the friction of the counter-rotational spin, it's kind of like a vortex vacuum. It's probably pulling, it is pulling energy from dark energy and dark matter and converting it into visible, what we would call visible mass energy. And now scientists, when they look at, okay, at the current rate of the expansion of the universe, according to Einstein's formula, there should be 95% more mass than there is. And scientists have determined that that missing mass is dark energy, dark matter. Which are actually just polarities of each other.
Right.
But now there's a new theory from the University of Lyon in Paris that dark energy, dark matter are a liquid. They're calling it dark liquid. This is the new, one of the newest theories emerging. And this dark liquid has a polarity of its own as well. And if there's a differential between those polarities, which there has to be according to all of my calculations, then that differential, again, ties into all of the other differentials all the way down into the quantum universe.
Mm-hmm.
So my theory on differentials can ultimately explain how to manifest and make zero-point energy, which I've done in these little stones as a very small-level experiment. Mm-hmm. I've been able to cause energy to move in a human body with absolutely no energy in the stone itself, but just by programming it from nowhere. You know, where is this extra energy coming from? We're just touching a rock, and all of a sudden our electricity in our body goes up. Well, that's what, you know, zero-point energy is all about.
Hmm.
And now being able to scale that up to larger models, in my lab itself, the energy that I treat these stones with, I have three different wave generators that are very brand new. My first one is so powerful it shorts out all my meters. It literally destroys them permanently.
Oh, brother.
And
I can't get
any meters anywhere near it. And then I actually broadcast the actual NASA sound of the sun into these stones so it stays there, just like a song stays on a sheet of plastic called a CD.
Okay.
And then I cool them down in my third generator where they kind of settle energetically and they harmonize. And so what's interesting about this is when I took some measurements on the amount of energy going into my system, my new quantum energy generators, and how much was coming out blew my mind. And where most over-unity devices fail is they see an increase in voltage, but they don't check their amperage, and their amperage goes down. Amperage is the punch. It's the weight in an electric current.
Okay.
So to really know if we have an increase of energy in a system, we multiply voltage times amperage to get watts. So we have to look at all three. And I was seeing on the meters, my meters only go to 5 amps.
Mm.
It only takes 2 amps to 2 milliamps to kill a human being.
Mm.
So I went to 5 full amps, and I only had 1.5 amps going in, and my voltage was about the same. So it means I had over-unity. And I did it by mathematically calculating wave generators to be in what are called harmonic sets, using the mathematics of these differential harmonic codes.
Mm-hmm.
And these differential harmonic codes are literally the cause of what created the six-sided crystal. And going back to the six-sided crystal, when Marcel Vogel at IBM was looking at crystals in their liquid state before they went solid state, which is mostly just silica and, you know, water, he noticed using invisible wavelength cameras, sensitive cameras in the ultraviolet, that he could see the waveforms that came together to create the crystal, and that when the crystal finished growing, the waveforms would leave. He could actually see this on a camera.
Wow.
So when I look at the crystal now, you know, comparing it to my experiment in the swimming pool, I can clearly see that two counter-rotational spherical waves collided together in opposite spins, and because they're pulsed, they create this geometry called a six-sided, you know, hexagon. And when that liquid state eventually becomes solid state, you get a frozen, you know, image of what those waveforms did.
Right.
And because you can do the math on it, and it's actually very simple, you know, counter-rotational division, you get the harmonic codes. Once you know the harmonic codes, you can just duplicate them.
Okay.
And
so,
do unimaginable things.
So this clockwise and counterclockwise rotation with slight differential mm-hmm. is taking place not only in your pool, but
everywhere.
Everywhere, the galaxies, the universe, the solar system operates the same way, right down to the atom, correct?
Everything, it seems, is operating on this exact principle, and I go all the way back to, you know, my vision that I was receiving
right.
as a little kid after seeing the UFO was all about the counter-rotational spins.
Right. Well, it's no coincidence because many UFO witnesses and a lot of UFO footage of what they claim is are actual UFOs, mm-hmm. you will see the top is going either clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on you know how you're looking at, and the center is going in the opposite direction. Why is that? You know, is that coincidental?
No, and that is the key. In fact, what you're saying right there is the key, because I can actually see the wave generator impressions on a lot of UFOs,
mm-hmm.
and I've taken, you know, photography of what I believe is real UFOs from stills or video. And I can actually do the math on these, on the wavelengths of these, you know, wave generators, and divide them into each other and see if they produce random crazy numbers or harmonic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And on the real UFOs, you get beautiful harmonic numbers.
Right.
And so it's telling me how they work. And in fact, what you just described, I mean, it's key to how they work. And it's no coincidence that I believe it was in the early 70s that Bardeen, Cooper, and Schaefer won the Nobel Prize in Physics for spinning electron pairs in opposite directions on the same axis. Mm. And they produce superconductivity. They won the Nobel Prize.
So in other words, while we're trying to use brute force to push our way against gravity,
right.
ET is in harmony with nature.
ET is using, you know, once you know the way the waves function that cause a falling body to mm-hmm. be attracted to a gravity field, hence a rock falling towards the Earth,
right.
then you know how to counter that. You just change the wave function of that craft.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, Einstein said the field is the sole governing agency of the particle, matter.
Mm-hmm.
Not the other way around. So if you alter the field, you alter matter.
Okay.
You don't alter the field by altering the matter. You alter matter by altering its field. And so that's where invisible photography comes in really handy, you know, ultra-sensitive
right.
infrared and ultraviolet right. cameras, so that you can start to see the wave functions. Now, looking at my swimming pool, I could clearly see the counter-rotational spin of the black shadow spinning in, and then the clockwise was bright. It was light. Spinning on top of it. Now that's a polarity right there.
Right.
But it gets more interesting. Boyd Bushman spins this little thing that looks like a plastic mini canoe. It's called a celt or a rattleback if you want to look at it on Google.
Right.
And when you spin it counterclockwise, it likes to spin really smoothly. And it's a very balanced little, very, very light sheet of thing of plastic. It's bowed in both directions, you know, 90 degrees to each other. You spin it clockwise, and it vibrates and starts going back counterclockwise, which shows that clockwise and anticlockwise in gravity are not equal.
Right. Mr. David Sarita, I am very sorry we've got to cut it close, but once again, your website?
My website is voiceentertainment.net. That's voiceentertainment.net. My book,
The Hidden Harmonic Codes of the Universe, my new film, The Voice, and Quantum Communication are there, and Water, and a lot of other exciting things. So thanks for having me with you, Dave.
Oh, it's been our pleasure, believe me. If you have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. The show, as well as all the forum shows, is archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on the forum button on the homepage. And We Are Not Alone is also archived on my website, UFOImplications.com. Stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And thank you for joining us today. And until next time, at 10 a.m., on the first Saturday of each month. This is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You've just been listening to another episode of our forum shows on Saturday mornings. We Are Not Alone, hosted by our own David